Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to start the show today by taking a look at the night sky. My guest, Paul Kinzer, he's the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. He's a member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club. Does some nice things with the night sky and does a lot of educational work with schools and libraries and all kinds of people. So it's great to have him back. And certainly we're going to talk about the Juno probe, but a whole lot more. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions today about the planets, the night sky. Give a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org. Post on our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. Maybe you've got a great night sky photo. We'd love to see that as well. And Paul Kinzer, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
We have lots we can talk about today. There's a lot of excitement going on in the astronomy world right now.
Yes, I would say right now, probably as far as missions in space, the one that's getting the most attention, and it should, is the Juno probe. It arrived at Jupiter on the 4th of July. It was launched in 2011. It's been on its way ever since, and they communicated with it and found that, yes, it is exactly where they want it to be. It fired its engine for 35 minutes, something like that, which is pretty amazing that far away. And it's now in a polar orbit. It's going to come down towards Jupiter from its pole, and it's going to really whip quickly and close to Jupiter, and then it'll zip far out again. And the reason it needs to do that, they can't stay close to Jupiter for very long because Jupiter is a pretty deadly place to be. It has a lot of radiation it gives off. Its magnetic field is amazingly powerful. So they only want to be near the planet for short bursts of time where they'll do a lot of readings in a lot of ways, and then it'll whip far out again. And I believe they're planning 37 orbits over a period of about a year and a half, and then they will deliberately crash it into the planet.
Wow, that is so cool. And it started in 2011?
That's when it was launched. And the way these missions go, it was in the planning stages long before that. I'm just waiting with excitement, as everyone is. 3,000 miles is amazing. You know, that's just about touching the cloud tops. You have to remember the planet itself. If you could open it up, you could pour 1,000 Earths into it. It's a very large thing, the largest planet in the solar system, by far the most massive. If you took all the other planets, all the other bits in the solar system other than the sun, put them all together, they wouldn't equal the mass of Jupiter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Starting in 2011, and here we are, 2016, what was the distance traveled roughly?
I don't know, because I know most missions now, and I'm not sure what the course it took was, but now, in order to save fuel, typically what they'll do is they'll fly by other planets, and they'll use the angular momentum. They'll steal a bit of it from those planets. And when they arrive at a planet, they actually end up leaving faster than they got there. And they can save rocket fuel that way. But Jupiter is 500 million miles away. So it was a long flight.
Wow. It's just amazing to me. What are they really hoping to find? You know, you talked a little bit, but...
Well, just yesterday I went to the website, and the goal of the mission is to understand the origin and evolution of Jupiter, look for a solid planetary core, map the magnetic field, measure water and ammonia in the deep atmosphere, and to observe auroras. And all of that is to try and figure out what makes Jupiter tick. Why does it have this huge, huge magnetic field that it does? When the Voyager spacecraft went by back in the 70s, they found that the magnetic field of Jupiter stretches behind it all the way out to the orbit of Saturn, hundreds of millions of miles away.
Wow.
If you could see the magnetic field in the sky at night, it would be much larger than the full moon, even though Jupiter is thousands of times farther away than the moon. And that's just one of the things that they hope to study. I also was reading that, you know, the theory has been that that all the planets have a rocky core, but there's another theory that maybe the bits of rock and things like that are sort of spread around and not in the form of a core, and that's one of the things they want to find out. They want to find out about the water in the atmosphere. Somehow that will help them with theories about where did Earth's water come from. So, and they also, there's an interesting video at the NASA Juno website talking about how, unlike the Earth, we have a pretty powerful magnetic field for our size too, but we're a solid body, so we can't see that magnetic field deep down where it exists. But on Jupiter, they'll be able to look thousands of miles down through its atmosphere and possibly get some insights into why does it have the magnetic field it has and how does it work.
Wow. It's just an amazing... You think about the technology and the human mind and what can be accomplished is just amazing to me.
And it's amazing, too. This is actually considered a sort of a medium budget for a space probe, just like the one that reached Pluto just over a year ago. They're sort of a mid-range mission, and they're not sort of stripped to the bones, but they're very, very keen on getting as much as they can for as little cost as possible.
Talking today with Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. You may have some questions about Jupiter or the other planets or the night skies in general. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Can email us at talk@wpr.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You mentioned the moon in passing, and the moon, last night I had to get up from bed at around 12:30 at night, and the lights off, and I looked outside, and it was like you could walk anywhere without a flashlight.
Oh, yes.
It was really bright last night. I think tonight is the real full moon.
Right, and you know, I've always found it interesting, on the night of the actual full moon, the light coming from the moon is pretty significantly larger, I think it's like 30%, than the night before and the night after. It doesn't really necessarily look that way to our eye, but what you're seeing during the full moon is the sun is beaming straight down at the moon. It's straight up in the moon sky, and that light bounces off the moon and hits the Earth. I sometimes wonder what it would be like if the moon were an actually brighter object. The moon is pretty dark. If you see last week, there's a probe that is up in space about a million miles from Earth, constantly looking at the Earth. And every once in a while, the moon passes through its camera's field of view, and you can really see how much darker it is than the Earth. Some moons in the solar system are primarily made of ice, very white. Our moon is quite dark gray, even though it looks bright to us. If we had one of those ice moons, actually, if it were here, it would probably be a big ball of water. But if we did, the moon would be probably too bright to look at.
It's probably not a good night to be going out and looking at other things because of the brightness. But if you've got binoculars or a little telescope, what a perfect night to go out and take a look at the moon.
Yeah, the moon, there's no other body that you can look at up in space that'll show you more detail than the moon. One, because it's so close to us, and two, because it has no atmosphere, none to speak of. And there are thousands of features that you can see, and every night they look different because as the moon takes a month to go around the Earth, the shadow line between night and day on the moon moves so you can see features under different lighting, and so they're changing all the time. And under the full moon, one of the things that's really prominent are the rays around the brighter craters. You can really see those during a full moon, and a pair of binoculars will show you a lot of detail.
Yeah, absolutely. Gary in Green Bay has something for us. Let's go there. Gary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there.
What can we do for you?
I am a member of the Neville Public Museum Astronomical Society here in Green Bay, and the museum has an exhibit from now through November on the night sky the history of astronomy in Northeast Wisconsin, and many photographs taken by our club members.
Very, very cool. And it's right in Green Bay.
Right in Green Bay at the Neville Museum. And if the weather is nice tomorrow night, we are planning at the museum for some observing, but it looks like it's going to be cloudy.
Yeah.
Life goes.
Yeah, that's why it's pretty hard to plan astronomy events.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Gary. So if you want to take a look at a nice astronomy exhibit, the Neville Museum in Green Bay would be a good place to go.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, let's go to another Gary, this one in Green Bay. Gary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. If the guest knows, I've always been curious as to how we fly these spaceships through the asteroid belt.
Well, our image of the asteroid belt comes to us pretty much from movies. Even though there are many thousands of objects in the asteroid belt, its circumference is, I bet a billion miles, and it's 100 million miles or so from one side to the other. So it's a very, very large space. And that space is mostly empty. So flying through it is not particularly risky. It is interesting you say that. The Juno probe, getting close to Jupiter, one thing I read is that Jupiter likes to throw things around and little bits here and there, and Jupiter has a very minor ring of its own. And I've actually been curious to find out, will Juno be going anywhere near that? But the asteroid belt, though it maybe is one of the busier places in the solar system, there's still mostly empty space.
Yeah, thanks, Gary, for calling. Appreciate it. Yeah, that's not the way it's shown in the movies.
No, especially the older movies. You know, they always go through a meteor field or asteroids or something. And, if there were really that many, they would have smashed into each other long ago and cleared themselves out.
Christina in Glenwood City up next. Hi, Christina. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Thank you. I'm very fortunate to live in an area with very black, dark skies. We enjoy bonfires and looking at the skies. And I'm wondering if you can recommend a free app to both educate and help us enjoy those skies.
I'll tell you right now, I don't own a smartphone. Larry actually knows more about this than me. I do know a very popular one is called Sky Safari. And I don't know if any of them are free, but a dollar or two, and the more features you want, the more you might pay, but none of them are expensive. And yeah, they're very neat because all you do is aim your phone at the sky and it'll tell you what you're looking at, and you can ask it questions, where's this right now, and it'll maybe tell you where to point. A program that I use on my computer that you can also get for a smartphone is called Stellarium. That's Stellarium, and it's free. If you have it on your laptop or your desktop computer, it's a home planetarium program. It can show you almost anything in the night sky from 10,000 years ago to 10,000 years from now, down to the second. It's a very good thing to look at in detail, preferably before you go out to look around, to find out, well, what's going to be up there and when will it be there?
I have one on my cell phone. It's called Star Tracker, and I've had it on for a long time. And I don't remember if I think it was free.
Right.
I might have paid a buck for it.
And, of course, they're always changing. There's new ones all the time.
There's new ones all the time. But I oftentimes will pull that out of my phone out of my pocket and point it up at the sky to see, what is this I'm looking at?
Right.
Right. It's really handy.
And one more thing. The thing is, the problem won't be so much finding something. It will be choosing amongst the many, many things out there. So I would suggest doing a search for best free astronomy apps.
And yeah.
I know there will be dozens and dozens. And I guess if I were getting one, I wouldn't really even care that much which one, because I'm sure they're all useful.
Yeah.
And you could try a few until you found one you liked.
Paul Kinzer, our guest today, as we take a look at the night sky with him. He is the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Malik Anderson, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11:45 today, we'll be talking about a Madison-based swing band. It brings back swing and big band music in a big way, entirely a female band. So we're looking forward to that. Right now, taking a look at the stars with Paul Kinzer. And open lines to get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. And, you know, you're mentioning, we were talking about the Juno probe, but there are a lot of probes out there on other planets as well.
Right, yeah. Right now in the night sky, you can see very easily, just with your naked eye, you can see Jupiter in the west, but you can also see Mars and Saturn right now. And orbiting Saturn is the Cassini probe. It's been there since 2004, taking pictures constantly, not only of the planet and its rings, but of all the various moons going around Saturn. And it will keep taking those pictures until next year, but it's running low on its nuclear fuel. And again, they're planning on slamming it into Saturn so that it doesn't accidentally hit one of the moons at any point in the distant future. Because there's a possibility that some of those moons might have life on them, and they don't want to contaminate them with little things from Earth that might still be alive. But around Mars, which is very bright in the southern sky, a yellowy-orange star that you can see, every 2 years we get closer to Mars in its orbit. Mm-hmm. As we zip around the sun once a year, and it takes about 2 years, we catch up to it. And we caught up to it a couple of months ago. And it's still bright in our skies. There are five active probes orbiting Mars right now. Three of them are NASA probes. One is a European Space Agency probe. And one is from India. And there are two robots rolling around on Mars right now. So that's kind of neat. There's also a probe orbiting the dwarf planet Ceres right now. And one going around, it's very difficult to say, but it's Comet 67P. Oh, I'm not even going to try and say its name. It's named after its discoverers, both of them Russian, and I don't want to butcher their names. But 67P. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there.
Let's turn to Dot in Manitowoc next. Dot, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I live in Manitowoc, and there will be a full moon, of course, tonight. And we're on the shore of Lake Michigan. I would like to know when the moon will rise on the horizon this evening. I would like to go down to the lake and watch it as it comes up over Lake Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't have that information in front of me, but again, a moment ago I mentioned the Stellarium program. That if you, what you do when you download it for free, you can put in your own location, your exact location, and then it will show you to the second when various things are going to happen in the sky. You could also, if you have a smartphone, download one of those many free apps. Then you could just aim it at the lake. And I know a lot of them, they'll, you know, you aim it down below the horizon and just scan around. It'll show you the moon. It'll show right. you exactly where it'll be. But, I don't have access to that information right in front of me.
And it's possible that the moon's going to be up before, and will be up before it's really dark.
Oh, yes. The full moon, again, it's on the opposite side of our sky from the sun. So typically the full moon rises pretty much right as the sun sets. It can be within a half hour of that, but it's close to when the sun sets. And right now, it doesn't really get dark till well after 10 o'clock.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but seeing it rise up in the colorful evening sky, that can be a beautiful thing, too.
Oh, yeah. Last night I noticed that as I was outside, I said, oh, there's the full moon, and I missed the rising on the horizon. And so I didn't want to miss it this evening.
Yeah. Well, I guess I've given you all I can. Those programs are very accurate, though.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Tim in Eau Claire has a question. Hi, Tim. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I woke up this morning looking at trending stories on Facebook, and it looked like it was reported by several interesting news outlets as well as some, you know, reliable news outlets, that a lot of people are saying that NASA cut a feed that showed a UFO coming into our atmosphere. I'm wondering if the guest has any opinions or thoughts on that, or maybe a thought as to what it might be. I'd like to hear both his opinions and a thought as to what it might be, if possible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I haven't read those news stories. My opinion on UFOs is if it is not easy to cross space, and for some living creature to come here from another star far, far away, the effort that would take would be phenomenal, unless they have technology that, that is beyond even our understanding of science. I do not believe we have been visited by UFOs. I believe that if we were visited by a UFO, NASA would not cut the feed. They would be jumping up and down and saying, wow, look at that. So, no, I don't think so. And what it could be, typically UFOs, the most commonly reported UFO is the planet Venus. As far as something entering the Earth's atmosphere, there are, every day there are meteors, thousands of them that hit the Earth, and every week or so there are some fairly large ones. Or it could possibly have been an orbiting satellite whose orbit decayed, an old rocket stage that burned up. I don't really know.
You'd think that we would be able to, you know, with the kind of technology, if something was coming our way, we would know about it long before they got here.
If it were large, yes, we are now able to track large items. You know, if it's some tiny little ship that suddenly comes out of hyperspace or something like that.
Yeah.
But we have no reason, and there are no none of the reports of UFOs that I have ever looked at turned out to be creatures from somewhere else. They almost always have a very simple explanation.
John in Madison next. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
Larry, you have some of the greatest shows ever.
Thank you.
I hope your program goes on forever. I have to tell you that I grew up on a farm north of Melrose up in the west central part of the state. And as a kid, I used to get up and I would even go for walks at night alone out toward the woods through the fields, just because there weren't any city lights to dim my view. The stars and the planets have always excited me. And to listen to your guests, your absolutely wonderful guests, is like being a kid in a candy store as a 65-year-old again. But when I was a sophomore at Luther College in Decorah, Iowa, Dr. Emil Miller taught me about astronomy, and he created a love even beyond what I'd had before, that to this day, it really makes you, puts you in perspective, I guess. And I just wanted to thank you for this wonderful guest. And before the show is over, would you please repeat the title of his book and where we could possibly get it? Because I'm like that little kid on the farm again right now. I just love listening to your program. So I had to say.
Well, thank you, John. Thanks very much. And the book is published by, is it Harvard Press?
Cambridge University
Press. I'm sorry, Cambridge University Press. And it's in a second...
Second edition came out late last year. Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. And I wrote it for folks just like John, the people who are interested in possibly learning more about astronomy. How do you go about it? You know, if I want to buy a telescope, a pair of binoculars, do I want to buy them? Do I want to just look up? There are many, many ways to look at it. And that's the main thing, is to just look up. People who do go on walks at night or who go camping, so often, you know, I'll ask them, well, did you see anything in the night sky? And they're like, what? You know, they look at their campfire and talk, and that's great. But lay back, look up. That's the way to get it started. But yes, I also have always loved looking at the sky, even though I was raised in the middle of St. Paul.
Yeah, and did you have formal training in astronomy?
No. I was born in 1960, shortly before President Kennedy said we choose to go to the moon. So I grew up with NASA, and it was in the news all the time. But, you know, even before all of that, people have always been interested in the sky. And, you know, it's one of those things where any place you look up at night, or at the sun during the day. Don't ever look directly at it. But, you know, all of the objects that are up there, each and every one of them is its own story and its own, you know, the sun is a star, and all of those stars we're finding are suns, and most of them have planets around them. And, you know, whether or not there's life around those planets, they're still complicated systems that we could study forever, every single one of them.
Thanks again, John. I appreciate it very much.
You're very welcome.
And let's turn to Dennis in Green Lake next. Dennis, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm wondering if there's going to be any major meteor showers in the next 4 to 6 months. And I don't think there's anything more awe-inspiring than a sky on a clear January night in northern Wisconsin.
Oh, meteor showers.
Yeah. Well, first about in January, the thing about the sky in January is you can go out right after supper and look up because it's dark, whereas now we have to wait till quite late at night. But meteor showers, well, the most famous popular meteor shower happens every year in mid-August, and this year it's going to peak on the night of August 11th or the early morning of August 12th. And it's the Perseid meteor shower, and it's called that because if you follow all the trails of the meteors backwards, they all seem to come out of, like the meteors came out of the constellation Perseus. It doesn't mean that's where most of them will be seen. They can be seen anywhere in the sky, but if you see one and then you drew a line backwards, they would radiate out of that constellation. And predictions, which are very difficult for meteor showers, they're saying this year could be very active on that night, possibly if you were under really dark skies and you could see every meteor, which you wouldn't. You might see as many as 200 per hour. That's a few per minute. They could be wrong, though. And the thing is, for any meteor shower, they're more active after midnight because that's when the Earth is sort of pointed into the debris swarm that we're passing through as we turn around, and we're more than halfway turned through the night, we head into the debris. And that's what meteor showers are caused by, the debris trails of comets.
And so what causes, it's just what I was just going to say, what causes them, and the size of them is surprisingly, you told me another time.
Right, they're grains of sand.
Yeah.
Most of them, bright ones might be a pebble, you know, and every once in a while there's one, say, the size of a city bus, but those are quite rare. It's mostly little, you know, even the bright ones you see, they're just a small pebble hitting our atmosphere at a couple of 100,000 miles per hour, and they hitting our air that quickly, they burn up and they leave behind a trail from their destruction. And we're basically going through, you know, comets are balls of gas and rock and dirt, basically, floating through space, and they come near the sun. And when they come near the sun, they melt a bit and they leave bits of them behind. And meteor showers happen when we go through those trails of debris.
It's very good. And what's the date again?
The night of August 11th, morning of August 12th. And this year especially, you would want to do it mostly after midnight because there will be a pretty big moon in the sky early in the evening, but it'll set a little after midnight. And once it's gone, you'll be able to see the dimmer meteors much, much better.
Beth in Caledonia, Minnesota, it's your turn. Thank you for calling.
Yes. I have a comment and a question. I, too, was raised in a rural area, and my mom was one that always had us go outside, and we'd lay on the grass because we didn't have any air conditioning, and in the shade, and we'd look at the cloud formations and how they were moving, and at night, we would sleep outside sometimes and just watch the stars and stuff. When I did my internship, I was in Washington, D.C., and I never realized in that year that I never saw the stars once until we got out of that city, and really have an appreciation for them ever since. So that's my comment. My question is, give me the names of those apps again.
Mm-hmm.
The one that I know that I'm familiar with that you can get for your phone or just your computer at home is Stellarium, S-T-E-L-L-A-R-I-U-M.
R-I-U-M, okay.
Yep. And it's a free download.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's for your computer.
And they also do have a version of it now. I haven't used it, but they do have a version for smartphones.
And the one I have on my phone is called Star Tracker.
Star Tracker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And again, there are plenty of others.
Okay. And what was, you said that you could go looking for apps?
Yep.
You told that one lady?
Yeah, I would, I don't really have an address. I would just do a search online for best astronomy apps.
Okay.
Or free astronomy apps,
mm-hmm.
and you'll come up with many, many choices.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling.
And I'd like to talk a little bit about stars in the city. It's sort of sad. We seem to have decided to light up the night sky like it's day. I grew up in St. Paul, and we had street lights, but they lit up the street. They didn't try and make it daylight out there. They tried to make it so you could walk down the street, and I guess they assumed cars had headlights, so you could see quite a few stars. But now the lights are much brighter, and unfortunately, many power companies are replacing the old lights with new LEDs, which could really, really bring back the stars if they chose the right ones. But sadly, they're not necessarily making good choices. They're getting cool white, pure white lights, which is really bad for our night vision. Are rods that see best in the dark. They're far more sensitive than our colored vision, the cones, but they're saturated if there's any blue light, and these new LEDs have a lot of blue light, so they're not making it easier. Even though they're not as bright, they seem brighter.
I visit Tucson every once in a while to visit family, and they do a pretty good job in Tucson,
they
Arizona.
They do, and it's because they have observatories nearby. Kitt Peak is probably the most famous. Tucson is also the home of the International Dark Skies Association, whose whole reason to exist is to bring back the night sky. So they have ordinances that they enforce. Flagstaff, Arizona is another one, where they have the Lowell Observatory. You can see the Milky Way from downtown Flagstaff. Sadly, they're now getting light pollution from Phoenix, hundreds of miles away. Phoenix, their light dome it affects the skies in Flagstaff.
You can join in, too. Still a little time at 1-800-642-1234. What planet news do you have? Let's take Mars and Saturn. What are they up to?
Well, Mars and Saturn are both in the night sky. If you look right after it gets dark in the south, you'll see, you won't miss Mars. It's a yellowy-orange star, and it's very bright. And then look about a hand's width if you hold your hand out.
Mm-hmm.
Spread your fingers from thumb to pinky. To the left of it will be a much dimmer but still fairly bright yellow star, and that's Saturn. And if you have a small telescope and you aim it, just a small one, if you aim it at Saturn, you can see its rings, and they're wide open now. They open and close over a 15-year period since it's tilted on its axis, just like we are. But you can see those rings even with a small telescope. Binoculars won't do it. Mars, every 2 years it gets very bright and people get excited. But if you look at Mars through a telescope, unless it's a very big telescope, you're pretty much just going to see an orange ball. But still, it's another planet. And then Jupiter is still in the sky. It's getting lower every night in the west, but it's still a bright star. And with a pair of binoculars, you can tell that it's a ball. It's not a little point of light through binoculars. You can see the ball of it. And you can see four of its moons.
Do you recommend a certain binoculars for people? For
I have a whole chapter in my book about choosing binoculars for astronomy. But the thing you want to do is you want to get the biggest objective lenses. That's the large lens on one end of your binoculars, the biggest that you can then comfortably hold the binoculars. For me, that would be what's called a 10 by 50. It magnifies things 10 times. That's the 10. And the width of its objective lens is 50 millimeters. That's a very good choice for astronomy. If that's maybe too heavy for you, another good one is 7 by 35. That's a very common binocular. And any binoculars will bring more light to your eye, which means you'll be able to see dimmer things, which means you'll be able to see more things, because most of the things we can't see in the night sky, it's not so much that they're too small, they're too dim. And if you get more light to your eye, you can see dimmer things.
And you have you have a kind of a deal I mentioned earlier, and I just wanted you to explain. You've got your own setup that you can give educational presentations.
Yes, just this past spring, we finished building an observatory in our school district's forest, which is between the two of the small towns in our district, Galesville and Ettrick. Trempealeau is another town in our district. And that observatory now has two large telescopes in it, large amateur telescopes anyway. I built a 14-inch reflector that's there, and UW La Crosse donated a 12-inch, it's called a Schmidt-Cassegrain telescope. And it's in a building whose roof can roll off, and we will be having public events there periodically. We have one coming up on August 26th this year that's open to the public, and we'll be giving away a telescope.
Oh, very cool. And is there a site, a website?
It does not have its own website, but if you contact the La Crosse Area Astronomical Society, if you just do a Google search for LCAAS, it's the first thing that'll come up. You'll be able to find information there or contact people to find out when their public events are. And they have other public events besides just that observatory, so that's something to check out.
And you personally go around the state. I know I think you're going to be in Green Bay coming up.
Next week, I'll be at a few libraries in the Green Bay area, and then later in the week, I'll be out in Door County. I have a portable planetarium that I travel around the state with, and you can see where I'll be for the rest of the summer if you go to the website. That's seeingstarswi.wordpress.com, and go to the calendar page and you'll see where I'll be. There are a lot of public events, and that way you'll be able to see the stars during the day and clouds won't matter.
There we go. Well, let's see if we got time for, well, we're about out of time. Let's go to June in Jefferson for a last call. June, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I saw the constellations when I was a child in Chicago.
Yeah.
And I was kind of surprised. So I'm surprised that I live in the city of Jefferson and I don't see the constellations.
Yeah, that's too bad. I will say that Chicago has now the dubious title of the most light-polluted city in America. Typically, you cannot see a single star downtown. Times have changed.
Times have changed, unfortunately. Well, I tell you what, Paul, it's always a pleasure. Give that site again where people can learn where you're going to be and all that.
It's seeingstarswi, all one word, .wordpress.com.
Always a pleasure, Paul. Thank you so much for coming by. I look forward to your next visit.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Paul Kinzer, our guest today, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. It's published by Cambridge University Press. A member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club. I learned a lot, and I bet you did too. Well, I'll tell you what, we're really going to switch gears here, coming up with you next. We're going to be talking about big bands, and we're going to talk about a group, something called Ladies Must Swing. That's the name of a new album that's out. And June Dalton is the founder of Ladies Must Swing. It's a 19-piece, all-female swing band in Madison. So we're going to talk music and swing. I like swing. Do you? You'll have a chance to ask her some questions. Coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.